Hey writers, KJ here, announcing a new series and a definite plus for paid supporters of #MWriting. It's Writing the Book, a conversation between Jenny, who's just finished a blueprint for her next nonfiction book, and me, because I've just finished the blueprint for what I hope will be my next novel. Jenny and I are both trying to, quote-unquote, play big with these next go-rounds, which is a meta effort for Jenny, as that's exactly what her book is about. And we're basically coaching each other through, trading pages, thoughts, and encouragement, as well as some sometimes hard to hear honesty about whether we're really going in the right direction. So come all in on Team #MWriting and you'll get those Writing the Book episodes right in your pod player, along with access to monthly AMAs, the Book Labs, First Pages episodes, and come summer, we shall blueprint once again. So sign yourself up at amwritingpodcast.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonio, and this is #MWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, pitches, proposals, fiction, nonfiction, memoir, other things I'm probably not thinking of. We are the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done. And I am KJ Delantonio, the author of 3 novels, The Chicken Sisters in Her Boots and Playing the Witch Card, as well as a nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent, former editor of the New York Times Motherlode. You've heard all this. With me today, more importantly, is Meg Mitchell Moore, who has written a book that I think you're going to find is your summer go-to. It is called Mansion Beach, and I loved it, and we'll talk about it in a second. She is also the author of Summer Stage, Vacation Land, can attest to both of those. Great reads. The Islanders, 2 Truths and a Lie, The Admissions, loved that one too. They're all great. So anyway, lots of novels in the family saga, sometimes touch of romance, beach, summer, deep but also page-turnery read genre. Which is not a genre because that was too long. But anyway, Meg, thanks for coming to chat.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
This is going to be really fun. So I've read some of your other books, obviously, and I felt like this one, Mansion Beach, was you sort of moving to a different... It's a little... How to describe it? You've got a lot of points of view, which you always, you know, you often do, and a little bit of a mystery, which actually I've seen you do before. And then you've got a podcast going on so that you can have different people show off what's happening. I guess I was hoping you would talk about the evolution of style, actually over your whole career, sort of from like, I'm writing a kind of a basic book with a couple of points of view and third person close, or maybe first person, to these bigger stories with so much more to offer the reader. That's a really big question. Start wherever you want.
That's a great question. I don't know if it has been such an evolution. I have always written multiple points of view to the point where it makes me crazy and I wish I could do 1 or 2. I really wish I could. I've tried it. I can't do it. I just can't. My brain doesn't work that way. I can't do it. So even my very first novel, which I published in 2011, it was called The Arrivals. That was a much smaller story. So yes, I've evolved plot wise. But I remember, and this was when I was brand new and did not know what I was doing, and I was just trying to figure out how to write a novel. I had so many points of view. And I remember my now agent, maybe she was not my agent then and was becoming my agent, or maybe she was already my agent, but I remember her saying, we have to take out at least like 5 of these points of view. And it still has a lot. That's how I think. Those are the kind of books I like to read usually, not always. for one thing. But it just must be how I think. I'm always in everybody's head, and it's really hard for me to restrain that. So this book, I don't think has any more points of view than any other. Might have fewer than some. It does have a mystery.
Yeah, it might. Than some that I've read. I guess I saw it as different, maybe in part because of the use of the podcast to frame things.
Yeah, that's new. And then it's a bigger, you know, it's a bigger idea. It's a it's not a retelling of The Great Gatsby, because I don't like to use that word, but it is inspired by The Great Gatsby. So it has definitely some bigger, I was looking at bigger themes maybe from the start. A lot of times I back my way into the themes based on what my characters are doing. I don't always start with the themes, but this time I was looking at some of those big, what's the American dream, and what does success mean, and how does money equate with happiness, and some of those bigger questions. And I don't always do that. I might do it in reverse, but I don't always do that first. So I do think it has bigger theme-wise. It's bigger, maybe plot-wise. And some of the elements that move it along are a little different. I was working with a new editor for the first time. For this is my first full book with my new editor. So I think that had something to do with it too, because I think she was probably pushing me for some of those elements that don't come naturally to me, which I think ended up being good for the book.
Yeah, it's a little more, a thriller isn't exactly the right word, but there's definitely a page-turning mystery in there. So there's a page-turning mystery in Mansion Beach. And the question all along for the reader, like, you know somebody is going to die. But I at least did not know who. But I had an advance, and it came as a digital book. So I didn't have the cover, and I didn't have the blurb on the back. If a reader has those things, are they going to know?
Interesting.
Are they going to know who it is that dies?
I don't think so. The people I know who have read it both ways, I think, have not known.
That's good.
It's sort of that White Lotus effect, you know, for White Lotus fans out there, where there is a mystery care about the mystery, but you also, it matters, but it doesn't matter as much as what's going on with everybody else. So I really like that as a framing device. I like watching it and reading it, and I tried it myself this time. I did it a little bit in Two Truths and a Lie as well. I guess that's my only other one that has a dead body. And a lot of people are mad at me for who the person was who died, which I won't reveal.
In Two Truths and a Lie. Yeah, don't give it up.
No, I won't. So that was interesting. So I hadn't tried it again. And this time I went in a little nervous because people had been upset with me, particularly my husband. but I had the chance not to do what I did in Two Truths and a Lie, and I still chose to. So I still, for me, it was the right thing. But it was an interesting experience, and I didn't try it again for a couple books. And this time I did. Also, because I was playing with some of the Gatsby themes. I mean, Gatsby has three bodies. So I thought, I should have at least one. So I won't give anything away about
who or what or how.
But I did enjoy having that as a device to propel it. Now, that also, I don't think that was in the first draft. I don't think there was a body in the first draft. I mean, there were huge changes in this book. And I think that was one of them. I think we decided we needed the body after one draft.
Wow. Okay. Now I'm deeply fascinated. And of course, I'm trying to make this interesting and useful for those of you who haven't read the book. Although you could also stop, go get the book.
and read it, then
listen to this. And then it would be even better.
That is true.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just start by saying I am actually not a person who typically likes a book where your whole, like the question is, you know, either who died or who did it. Lucy Foley, I've enjoyed some of those, but it's not necessarily my favorite go-to genre. But the thing that made this book work great for me was exactly what you just said, that there's so much more to it. I could see that this story would exist before you added that. And that, I mean, that's so cool. And then I also am not a Gatsby person. So neither of those hooks is going to grab me. But what grabbed me, I think, was the different women, different versions of the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that, is that where you started?
I started, I think so. I was really, yes, I wanted to really look at notions of success, particularly for women today. You know, it's contemporary. It takes place, you know, in the summer that is coming out, or if you actually match up the dates and I think I messed up the tides and the moon in some places, but it's this summer. So yes, I was very interested in those questions. I wanted to have a love triangle because I think that's interesting and that's part of Gatsby too. So it's funny that you say you're not a Gatsby person. I think my first, another change from my first draft was very Gatsby heavy. I think I tried too hard. I think it just was, I was trying too hard to do the same thing, and
It's kind of a
it
reverse
didn't work.
gendered
It
Gatsby.
is, yes, it's reverse gendered. But what I was doing was just, I was just trying to, I don't know what I was doing, but it was a mess. I mean, I always knew I wanted to play with Gatsby, but I tried to do it too closely, and I tried a little first person with a narrator, which that's how Gatsby is told, but I can't write successfully in first person. So that was a mess. And I remember that my editor probably looked at this thing and said, "This is what are we doing?" But what she said to me nicely was, "You need to, like, don't worry so much about Gatsby at all. Like, you need to free yourself from those constraints and you need to write the story." And that was the best advice because that's when it started to come together. So it's more that Gatsby was a jumping off point, and some of those themes, I was so interested in how those themes are so relevant 100 years later. And they are. So I think I needed that as a jumping off point, but I didn't need to, you know, retell it scene by scene or try to have the narrator feel the same or do anything like that. And I had some missteps along the way before I figured that out.
It interests me that this doesn't seem to have taken any longer than your other books, did it?
Oh, it felt like it took forever. My books have come out either with, you know, a year and then the next summer, or with 2 summers in between. This one has an empty summer in between, so I
Okay.
did need that extra writing time for this. And I remember, I always start out thinking I can do this in a year. I'll absolutely do this. And I always hit, I'm a deadline hitter. You know, I always hit the deadline
Yeah,
because
you
I
give them
was,
something.
yeah, I was a journalist for a long time. I'm not late on things. I always hit my deadlines, but it might be awful. And so this was, nobody actually, I mean, it was pretty awful when I think back to that first draft. And I think that my editor and agent thought, okay, we can do this. And I looked at it and I looked at my schedule and my life and my brain. And I thought, I don't think I can do it very well. So we put it off for a year, which gave me not a year's writing time, but maybe 6 months that I hadn't had. And that
Right.
made a big difference. So this one took a little longer. Same thing with Vacation Land. I had the exact same thing happen where I thought it was going to come out one summer. It came out the next summer, but summer stage and then the book coming out, if I finish it, next summer we'll have no extra time in between. So it kind of, I've gone both ways with it.
Do you see any like consistency in why, or it just sort of either happens that way or it doesn't?
I think I tr when I try bigger when I try bigger books, I need more time, as it should be, but I always think I can do it. You know, I'm
Yeah.
patience is not my best quality. Impatience is my worst quality. So I find that I'm usually impatient to get something done or to hit the deadline or to put the book out, and I have to slow myself down when necessary. And Vacation Land, it was a different editor, same publisher, but different editor. I remember her saying, having that talk with me and saying, it will be a much better book if we put it out the following year. It will be so much better. And she was right. So we needed that time.
I
So,
so totally relate to this.
do you?
Yeah,
'Cause
absolutely. I mean, I'm in the middle of it now. If anybody who's listening is also listening to our What the Books or Writing the Books, What the Books also, like it's a little mini series where one of my co-hosts is writing nonfiction and I'm writing fiction and we're trading pages and we're doing a weekly series of conversations. And this week's realization was I have always known that I'm writing a story with multiple points of view, but I couldn't start it that way. I had to start it with just this one protagonist. And then I thought, oh, well, then it'll just be that. And it'll probably be really easy. Look, I've got this all planned out. I'm just gonna, oh, I'll bet I can get it. Oh, what if I got my agent a draft this summer? Ha ha ha. It's, you know, it's not gonna, but I'm so impatient. I want.
Right. Well, I was listening to one of your to your podcast the other yesterday, and it was the one where you were talking about your story idea, how do you ideate the book?
Oh gosh.
And you write a book and then you present it to your agent and then you sell it, right? Sounds like that's your process. So I'm the opposite, where I get the contract first, and then I have to write the book, and I don't know which is harder because you don't have a built-in deadline. You have your own deadlines that you set, but you're writing something that you said, maybe this will sell, maybe it won't, I don't know. Whereas I know it will eventually be published, but I also have that pressure of I have to get things in on time. So what do you think is, what's better, what's worse?
I don't know. I envy that way. I feel like that would make me feel more secure, more professional. My agent doesn't, she's very against selling a book of mine, at least before I've written it, because she says I might change it and then it won't be what we sold, or I won't be happy. Right. So I don't know if I think she's just against it as a general rule, but I know lots of agents that do it. And I know a lot of writers that do it. And sometimes I look at this and I'm like, you know, I could do a proposal. Maybe we could sell it. I could get some money. That would be lovely.
Right.
Yeah. But
I see your point, and I know a lot of people think that way. I remember a long time ago when I'd published no novels. Maybe my book was about to be published, my first novel, and I heard Ann Patchett speak at a conference, and she said that she would never take money for a book she hadn't written.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, oh, well, if that's what Ann Patchett says, I guess that's what, like, that's how the world is. But I disagree because for me, first of all, she has a different life situation. But for me to keep income coming in steadily, because this is my only job, I feel like that's the way to do it. And I also feel like other industries, like my husband doesn't only get paid when he goes to the board meeting. He's getting paid every other week for his job that he does for the company that he works for. And so to try to approximate a little bit of a normal salary, I feel like that's the way to do it. Yeah. But then I also see the other side, and I see why Ann Patchett wouldn't do it, because she's Ann Patchett, you know, so she can take whatever time she
needs. That's so funny, because sort of think, well, you can do this because you're Meg Mitchell Moore, and a Meg Mitchell Moore is going to sell, and a KJ Delantonia, one of them will, and the others somewhat less so. At least that's my record at the moment. So I guess we just all see each other differently. My co-host, Serena, sells on proposal.
Okay. And so, that's fiction?
Yeah. Yeah. She sold thrillers and romances that way.
Okay.
So she has a bigger track record. Uh-huh. But also I've known people, I guess there's just different ways of doing it. And I would not say that I chose this. It chose me.
Interesting. But there is always that chance. I mean, my agent, if I said to my agent, I don't want to sell till I write, she would say, great, that might be better for both of us. We'll probably sell it for more because you might write something really good. But I just don't want to take that. I'm too impatient. You know, I'm just too impatient.
Yes.
Maybe if I had, had some big blockbuster and then I thought, okay, now for 2 years, it doesn't matter what's coming in because I'm getting money from that book, that would be different. But that's not how it works for most people.
And maybe I would feel less impatient with getting this done if I weren't, like, I want to get to the point where I know if we're going to sell. Like, I wrote a whole thing last summer and it never got to the point that we felt like we could sell it. And I'm sick of it. I can't write it anymore. I'm done with it.
Right.
I mean, maybe I'll come back to it, but
right.
And like, I've had, a freelance editor at it who's really good. My agent's been at it. I've finished it like 3 times and apparently it still sucks. So that's
interesting, because I always think that I would not be writing good books if I didn't know. If my editor gets a very messy draft, and all of my editors have gotten bad drafts and really helped me, and without that step, I don't think I would ever write a book that could even be sold. So I feel like I need to know, okay, somebody else who is better at this is going to be helping me really soon. I just need to get through it.
That would be amazing. I don't think my editor cares enough about me to do that. So,
my editor would absolutely prefer a cleaner draft, like no question. I mean, she would be delighted if I showed it to 5 people and got feedback, but I'm always in a rush. So I'm like, here, you're the first reader. Here you go. She's like, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's my agent. I'll be like, look, I've done. It's great. And she's like, it is great. But you know what would be really great? poor agent. Yeah. Okay. So we're both impatient, but we're doing this in very different ways. Well, now I want to hear more about that. How do you go from a first draft with no body to a final draft where the body... It's definitely one of the things that's pushing people to turn the page. It's not the only thing. So maybe that's the good news of not having started with a body. Right. Also, you know whose body it was?
Well, you must have, because you'd written We discussed a little bit about it. I remember thinking, could it be this person? And here's why we wouldn't want that person. Could it be this person? So we had some discussion. I didn't write it. Once I knew who it was, I didn't write multiple versions of it. I always had that person. But I guess I just think of it as more of a framing device than anything. And a framing device, you can add the frame later.
Yeah.
So the middle was mostly what was happening. And then there was this framing device. And then there are certain things at the end that kind of came together. And I was like, oh my gosh, this makes it all come together. But I didn't know that in the beginning. And that was
so
pretty
you maybe
late in the process.
Did you not know how the body became a body?
That changed. There was
a different way. I could see that.
Mm-hmm. And then I thought, oh my gosh, this is kind of what I needed to pull together all those themes.
Yeah.
And it was one of those exciting moments that really don't happen very often for
me. Oh, I bet. I mean, like, I can see it from the outside as a reader. It really did. It made it like your ending is one of those endings that changes the whole your whole reading experience for the better.
Right. Oh,
not that it wasn't a great reading experience the whole time. You know, sometimes somebody doesn't stick the landing and then you're like, I don't really want to recommend this. I mean, it was fine.
Right.
And sometimes it's just great. It's like solid. You're happy. Yay.
Right.
Okay. It's a good. Yours colors the entire. Like if I were somebody who would go back and reread it, it would color the entire experience differently, which is cool. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
It's very cool. You're welcome.
Now, when I wrote Vacation Land, I started with a body and the body came out. So I had the opposite experience where I thought I was writing a thriller. The whole time I was like, this is going to be my thriller. There's a body. And I had it all. And to me, it made sense. It all tied up. And my different editor, but my then editor said, I like everything but the body.
Wow.
And we had to keep it. Was first it was an important body, and then it was a less important body, and then it became the body of a seal because I had to have just a scene of children looking at something they found in the water in the very beginning. And so it was a body, and then it was a seal's body.
Okay.
Yeah. So this time I got to keep my body at least.
So I love this also because you haven't been pigeonholed into a genre that involves bodies or doesn't involve bodies. Has that been a thing as you've gone from book to book where people are like, well, I don't know, Meg, people don't really want you to kill people, or the, you know, the opposite. Well, I don't know. People are kind of looking for some more thrills from you.
Well, Vacation Land, I remember that editor said, we don't want this from you. We want a summer book. We're not looking for a thriller. You know, they had other thrillers. You know, they're doing their own end of the business too. So they definitely said that. This time, I mean, I feel like I'm not pigeonholed, but categorized as a beach book. But I think within beach books, you can do all of those things.
Yeah.
So if I were to write a giant thriller that I said, I think this should come out in the fall and as a big book, that's when they would probably say, I don't know if you have the audience to pull that off, unless the book is amazing. You know, it's sort of... I do feel like I need to come out in the summer to keep my readers.
Yeah, I actually love that. The beach book is you're right. It's a pretty big genre. It encompasses a lot. It encompasses a lot of things. The only requirement being that it's, you know, entertaining, which as far as I'm concerned is a book requirement anyway. But
Right. Yeah. It is interesting because my books also happen to usually take place on beaches, but not all beach books do. Mm-hmm. So it is, it has become a very big category. And competitive. Like, you also want to stand out in that category because there are so many books with the word summer in the title or the word beach in the title. Or this cover is a departure for me, which I love because I feel like I have done the just the oceanscape or the woman looking at the water. I've had those kinds of covers
a lot,
and I love this one.
it's a cartoony cover. I don't mean that. Yeah, you know, that sounds. Right. Yeah. It's almost a romancy cover, but there's only one person. I'm just saying, you guys should, it'll be in the show notes. You should take a look, because you're right. It is a departure. I see what you're saying there. But this one's, it's a hardback, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have all your books come out first in hardback?
They have. Yep.
Nice. Cool.
Have yours?
No, none.
None. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now do you think sometimes I feel like that's a great thing too.
I go back and forth on that. My agent is bummed about it, but for me, it's frankly much easier to like go out to everyone and be like, spend $18
totally.
Than just be like, spend $38.
I agree.
So I haven't minded. Oh, and I was at the Newburyport Book Festival a few years ago, and they accidentally got my second book only in hardback because it came out in hardback and paperback at the same time, which there was a moment of about 6 months when publishers were doing that, and then they stopped.
Okay.
And they only had the hardback, and I was like, oh, I don't even want anyone to buy that. Like, that isn't, I would be mad if I bought a hardback and then the next day I was in a bookstore and was like, hey.
Right. So. Yeah. It's interesting because I do actually love, because I bought the Chicken Sisters this weekend in paperback, and I love to read a paperback. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love to
carry them out.
They're lighter. Yeah. And I think it is appealing. It's so interesting. I mean, I remember Emily Henry's first couple at least came out paperback, mm-hmm. and then now that she can sell so well, they come in hardcover, but I still feel like a lot of
I look at them
probably,
and I'm like, I don't want that way. Now I'll just buy the digital version because I don't, that's not.
Right. It's really interesting. And I know I don't understand the sales end of it the way that the people who are doing the job do, and the profits and the margins and all that. But I kind of feel like, why isn't everything in paperback right away? You know?
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. And
yeah.
And also people's, especially us, as now we're talking about beach books. Some people's beach, I mean, if my beach vacation is an airplane beach vacation, I might bring one hardback, maybe.
Right.
And maybe, probably not, because I'm a fast reader. I could easily eat that on the plane and then there I would be. So I don't know.
Right, yeah.
I guess that's what e-readers are for.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, gosh, I could probably talk to you about in depth about the writing of this for about 12 hours because one last thought. So listeners, Meg writes, like we said, in multiple points of view. Talk to me about how you know when to change the point, you know, what point of view a scene should be told from.
Yeah, I don't. I do so much rewriting. A lot of that. I mean, I'm just thinking, I just turned in a draft yesterday of hopefully next summer's novel. And that is also multiple points of view. I think it's mostly three. It's three adult sisters and they each have a point of view. There might be a couple little scattered things, but when I look back, I think I need to probably adjust even in the draft I just turned in. I think I'm a little heavily weighted toward one over the other. So I don't always know. I just go on gut and instinct and then I fix it later, which is how I do almost everything. I just go by instinct and it's usually wrong. I change it later.
So you'll be like, you've written a scene and the point of view of one person, you realize, oh, either it's the other person's turn to have some more time, or I need their inner thoughts, not this person's inner thoughts.
Right. Yes.
And
it's
then sometimes
not very organized.
And sometimes you drop in, like, you know, a kid on a beach or so something.
Right.
Is that when you need something to happen that your protagonists don't know, or you just feel like?
I think it's fun. I just think it's fun sometimes to have this person you haven't heard from and you won't hear from again. But a lot, I probably do that. It probably gets taken out 80% of the time when I do that, because usually it doesn't make sense, but I just wanted to do it. I did it in my book I just turned in. And the first, I have this scene between a realtor and her husband, the realtor who's selling this house that these people are in. And she doesn't matter to the book, but I just really wanted to write the scene of her and her husband. And I even wrote in the draft, I know this doesn't make sense. And my editor said, yeah, this doesn't make sense. Like, you either need more of them or they need to go. I don't know what they're, you know.
Do you ever give them away for, like, you know, here's your pre-order bonus. Read this extra scene.
I should do that. Maybe I'll do that. I have never done that, but maybe I will. But I feel like, I think it might be Anne Tyler. I remember reading an interview Is she the one who does the strings? Like she has strings with different,
maybe,
every
I don't
character
know.
has a different colored string, and then she pulls down the red one because it's the red, you know, that's how she knows who she's writing. And I thought that was
That
really cool,
sounds
but I've never done it.
Like a lot
kind of
of
fun.
Work.
It does.
And like I would
It
need a
does.
different, I'd need a bulletin board. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know where I would hang it from, but it just seemed kind of nice to think then you maybe
Yeah,
she
it
knows
does.
if she's done the right amount for everybody.
Yeah, the Chicken Sisters is alternating points of view, and I just alternated, and then sometimes that was a problem, and I had to figure out like how to get somebody's feelings. Yeah, so
yeah, it's
that was kind of hard.
Confusing. I don't know why I do it to myself, because sometimes I'll just read a book that's just perfectly written in first person. I'm trying to think of an example right now because I don't even always read that much in first person, but like Yellowface. Did you read
Yes.
Yellowface? Okay. That book was so like simple in a way, but I loved it. I thought it was brilliant, and it was all just this point of view. And
Didn't you
and
occasionally
I just
get like a newspaper article, I think?
Maybe.
That must have been
maybe.
What she did when she had something her person couldn't know.
Yeah. I guess technically it would be harder to do it all from one because how do they know everything? But I feel like I get lost. Like I have trouble. I literally lose the plot because I'm just, this person's off doing something in their day that might have nothing to do with what's going on. I get really caught up in that kind of stuff. And that's what I have to edit out a lot.
Yeah. I'm always trying not to do that. I'll sit there while I'm writing like, no, do not let them move their coffee cup. They can move the coffee cup in a later draft if the coffee cup is still here. If they're even still in this coffee shop, if this coffee shop even exists.
Right.
But I can't seem to stop it. My like default mode is, you know, he said while taking a sip and burning his lip or whatever.
Right.
That's just, I can't seem to not do it.
Yeah. But sometimes that's where you get the gold too, because you wrote all that and maybe that one sentence is the thing that you needed. So it's just the process.
Yeah, it is. It's just the process. And it's longer than we hope and slower
Always.
Than we hope.
Always. Yes.
And more revising. Well, do you have any like genius words about revision for people? Because it sounds like you do a lot of it. We
I
all
do a lot of it. I think just it's so important. It's just so, for me, it's so important. I just think nobody gets it right. I hope nobody gets it right the first time, because if they do, I'm really jealous. But I think for the most part, nobody gets it right the first time. So revision is, I mean, I'd say I spend almost as much time on the revision, I probably do, as I do on the first draft.
Do you still lie to yourself in the first draft and let yourself pretend it's going to be right?
Oh, yeah, always.
Okay, cool.
I always think, oh, this is the time I did it. I nailed it. And then I get my editorial letter and it's like, great start. Here's the 700 things that you need to do now.
Well, thank you. I feel better. I hope everyone else does too.
Yeah, it's a long process.
It really is. All right. Well, this was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Me too.
As we hit the end of any episode, we always like to ask people what they've been reading. So I hope I'm not springing that on you.
No.
Okay.
I always have an audiobook going and a regular book going. On audio, I just started the new Emily Henry, which I've never listened to her books. I've always read them. And I know that the famous Julia Whalen is always her narrator. So, and she's phenomenal. So I'm loving the audio version, which is just funny that I've never done it with Emily Henry before. And
did
then
you listen to Julia Whalen's book that she wrote herself?
Mm-hmm,
that
I
was
sure
so
did.
Fascinating because it really was different. Like I actually read it, but I could feel anyway. Okay.
Oh, you should go back and also listen. It's such a good audiobook.
I bet.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And then I'm reading a novel called The Road to Dalton that my friend Hannah, who owns the bookshop of Beverly Farms in Beverly Farms, Massachusetts, phenomenal store, recommended to me. So I bought it last time I was there. And it is about a bunch of people in a small town in Maine, which is my vibe immediately I was in. But it's very good. So I'm reading that. I can't remember the author, which is unusual for me. But
I'll
Shannon something, I think. But it's The Road to Dalton.
That's okay. I will find it. Well, as everyone has gathered, I just finished Mansion Beach. I really loved it. It was a rare book that I loved even more when I got to the end of it. And it was amazing. And also in that vibe, that sort of small town Maine, but this is like small island, middle of the Atlantic. Welcome to Glorious Tuga Have you heard of this one?
No.
Okay, so it's a tiny island settled 300 years ago by a miscellany of Dutch and British and African people. Didn't have any locals, so that's kind of... And they have formed this society, and it's only open for half the year because you can't, like, get a boat into it because storms and currents and whatnot. So this woman has gone thinking that she's going to study the native tortoise population a la Darwin, but she gets there and they're like, great, you're a vet. That's what we need. So it's kind of like All Creatures Great and Small meets, I don't even know what it meets yet. I got to come up with that, but it's really a lot of fun and it's very okay. It's multi POV in a really interesting way because you're with her. And then sort of whenever you kind of get a little interested in someone else, you're like, oh, why are they doing that? Then maybe you'll switch to their POV. I really enjoyed it. So that was fun.
Great.
All right. So those are my recs. All right. Well, thank you so much, listeners, for joining us. And thank you, Meg, for joining me today. Where can people follow you? Where's the best place?
Mostly on Instagram at Meg Mitchell Moore. I'm on Facebook, but I don't use it very often. I kind of want to leave it. So, I also just read the Facebook memoir.
Oh, yeah?
I really want to leave Facebook, but also I know that they own Instagram. Instagram is the best place to find me, and I was so happy to be here. Thank you. It was really fun.
This was super. Okay. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Thank you.